I'd like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Richard's Coffee Shop, located in Mooresville, North Carolina, for their continued support to help our veterans and military community and also our patriots. Thank you guys very much. Today we got Rob DeBose. I hope that's right. Is that how you say it?
We say Dubois.
Dubois. I knew I'd mess that up.
I've heard so many variations. We can actually have a podcast about that. Dubois, two boys, devious, Dubois.
Sorry to mess that up. Rob is the founder and lead impact coach of the whole person development firm, Impact Actual. He is also a multilingual, retired U.S. Navy SEAL, intelligent professional, and career red team security leader. He has worked in more than 30 countries over more than 30 years. I greatly appreciate you coming on. I know it's been a little obstacle for us to get together and get you on, but thank God you're here and you're healthy, and here we go.
Everything happens when it should. That's how I see it.
Absolutely. For the viewers, I'd like to go kind of dig down in your background, where you grew up, you know, what led you to go into the military and choose the Navy in that path.
Well, sure. It's easy to do a quick scan. I'm kind of a hybrid in every dimension. My Navy career, to snap forward and then we'll go back to the origins. My Navy career was half and half, literally to the very day, half spook, half SEAL. So, as I'll come back to, I joined the Navy to become a SEAL, but I had a contract to be a Navy linguist because of a high aptitude for languages. And I became a spy for NSA, a technical spy with Russian language and culture and order of battle. Did that for 10 years. And on the 10th, on the anniversary of my 10th anniversary of my starting boot camp, I started BUDS. So there's a teaser. I guess they call that foreshadowing in the media. So we just did foreshadowing. So let's go back. I was born in 1966, in the middle of the hippie generation, and I'm hippie. I haven't been there. And I was born in California. I mentioned hybridization, right? So I was born in California, raised in California until I was halfway done being a kid. About 11 years old, we moved to New York, upstate. And so I experienced both the West Coast and the right coast, the left coast and the right coast kind of thing. And I grew up in both dimensions, you know, both parts of America. My folks were also politically kind of unaligned and or opposites. And so I learned a lot from exposure. And I really strongly value that too, the exposure to different viewpoints and experiences. I got to be about the end of my kidhood. I thought I'd be a Marine for a while and a veterinarian for a while. I did end up being a vet, but it's the other kind. And so that was my high school dream. You know, who knows when high school? A few people do. Jeff Gadway, one of my dearest friends from high school, knew exactly when it would be a fighter pilot. Became our valedictorian and went to the Air Force. We're still connected today because of thanks to social media. But I decided I wasn't going to be a veterinarian because well, that didn't work out. I didn't like chemistry and biology. So I said, well, what about the services? So I went to the different services and I said to the three recruiters, Army, Navy, and Marines, the three that I talked to, I'm not suggesting the Air Force doesn't count. I know some amazing Air Force professionals. Absolutely. And I said, who's got the toughest commandos? That was my one criterion as a 19-year-old idiot. Who's got the toughest commandos? And they all said, well, I guess that'll be the Navy. Remember, this was barely 1985. Mm-hmm. Nobody knew nothing about the Charlie Sheen thing and all. It was very, very low key. We knew the SF. We knew the Marines because we had lots of movies about those. But then the Navy SEALs, I think, were created so that we could make a lot of movies about ourselves. So we had to move into that gap. There was an opportunity. And so I said, well, I'll be a SEAL then. So I went to the Navy, said, sign me up. But they said, you get this great language aptitude, right? I took the test called the DLAB, the Defense Language Aptitude Battery. And they said, you've got the highest score we've ever seen at this particular MEP station where they do in processing. I said, whatever, cool. I didn't know what any of that meant. And they said, we need you to be a linguist. And I thought, well, my dad was a linguist. So Bob Dubois, my dad was a Chinese linguist during Vietnam. I lived in Okinawa because of that. So it kind of runs in the family, these crazy brains that are good at languages. So I said, cool, I'll do that. But I still get to be a SEAL, right? Because I know about the SEAL thing because the recruiter said. And they're like, absolutely, sign here. So I said, sure. And I signed. And they said, gotcha. And I went to boot camp on a contract to be an NSA spy. And then I I learned to my dismay, they had like a Buds Day. Again, still nobody knows what Buds is or Seals or anything in 1985. I went in 1986, January 3rd. And so I show up and I'm like, hey, I'm here. They shaved off long, beautiful brown hair I had. Made me look awful. And then I went, did some boot camp, did some t-shirt folding, you know, did some push-ups and stuff. And then we had smoke breaks, like smoke them if you got them kind of stuff. That was we used to like go outside and smoke like five times a day. Different time. And so we had this Buds Day and they said, hey, all right, you idiots, who wants to be a SEAL? And everybody's like, what's a SEAL? I'm like, I'm going to be a SEAL. And they said, line up, you idiots. And if you're interested in this thing called a SEAL, it's a lot of push-ups. And I was like, all the guys are like, I guess I want to be a SEAL too. They didn't even know what it was. I'm in the first in line to get prepped for this testing in Buds and they in boot camp. And they said, not you. You have a contract to be a linguist, and that's exclusive of Buds. You cannot, you're not a candidate for it. You're not eligible to be a SEAL. It's called a non-source rating. And I said, but they said, and the rest is history. So I went to DLI, learned Russian, went to tech school in Texas, and then I went to Fort Meade, where the belly of the beast is, NSA. And I worked there for a few years, and I never let go of the Navy SEAL thing. I was like, I'm going to be a SEAL. Deal with it, world. Deal with it, you know. And I was a lot of behavior problems. I was I'm a recovering alcoholic. Struggled with addiction for a good solid 10 years until I was about 25. So all this is during that same time frame. So that's where a lot of what I do with Impact Actual today, you talked about being an impact coach. The stuff we do today is based on life experience, deep, painful life experience of relationships and addiction and dashed dreams. Like, I'm going to be a SEAL. And but I didn't let go. And by the time, fast forward to the opening of the story, by the time I got to being almost 30 years old, we have in those who are in the, I guess you have a lot of military listeners. They understand there's MOSs, and for the Navy there's ratings. Those are the same thing, job specialties. I was a CTI, cryptologic technician, interpretive, a spy, and. And that rating is a non-source rating for Buds. But my rating manager by the time I'm almost 10 years in the Navy is my buddy Cliff, who was my supervisor as an E-nothing back at Fort Meade. And I told him back then, 10 years ago, dude, I'm going to be a SEAL someday. He's like, you're crazy. Nobody wants to do that. That's stupid. We get the best thing going. You get warm coffee, comfortable chairs. You get to listen to cool stuff, and everybody likes you because you can think things that nobody else can think as a spy in the NSA, right? So I was like, doesn't matter. I'm going to be a SEAL someday. Because I wouldn't shut up. It's like a little magpie. I'm going to be a SEAL. I'm going to be a SEAL. And so finally, Cliff, no accidents. You and I were talking off camera about my philosophy. There are no accidents, no coincidences. There's car crashes. We call them accidents, but they all have causes. Even the police won't call it an accident. It's not an accident. It's a collision. A collision happened as the result of a number of activities or actions or choices and things that happen that all add up to, if you did a math problem, a collision, two cars hit. Same thing with me and Cliff. I believe there's a reason for everything. And Cliff was my boss who said I was crazy, and we had the best thing going as NSA guys. And then by the time I was finally getting almost too old to apply for Buds, he was the rating detailer. He was the guy that would say who could go where within that community within the Navy. And I wrote an email, I sent a package up, said, dude, you got to let me try, you know, give me a waiver. And he said, all right, you crazy bastard, you'll fail. And we'll get you back anyway. So go ahead and try it. And that's where it started. I went to Buds and never looked back.
Do you think it was harder? Cause it was in your 30s. What was you 30 at the time?
I turned 30 in Buds. So I went to Buds and my birthday was in May the 4th. I didn't even know until a couple of years ago that's a thing. May the 4th, right? So May the 4th, I'm a Star Wars baby, which I actually saw in the theaters live because I'm so much older than almost anybody that's hearing you right now. I actually went to Star Wars. I was in the queues in Northern California before we moved to New York. So my experience in Buds was definitely harder in some ways because the body at 29, 30, 31 is not the same thing as it is at 22. Which most of the guys were. However, as much as it hurt in that respect, the we call it the fire in the belly. I didn't win the fire in the belly award. Somebody in every Buds class wins the fire in the belly award, and his name goes on a plaque on the wall in the grinder. the Fire in the Belly Award is a very important thing for that guy who really overcomes the most. But, you know, we talk about a Buds class and the graduates. Everybody overcame more than they ever have before. Every person. When we talk about the Fire in the Belly Award, that mother scratcher went way beyond because everybody did more than they've ever done before in that one thing. So I did definitely have fire in the belly to keep going through some physical pain, but I had the advantage of life experience and knowing some things are bullshit. Can we say bullshit on the show?
Oh, you can say whatever you want.
Fuck yeah. So
hell yeah.
I knew it was bullshit that, you know, they could kill you. I knew they couldn't kill us. And at one point when things got really, really hard for me, I had to make that commitment. I said, you're going to have to kill me to get me out of here. And that was the moment for me that I recommend to young men when they ask me, hey, will you mentor me? I've done a couple of several times now. I've done a coaching arrangement, like a coaching agreement with somebody for 3 months. But it's actually a young man who wants to be a SEAL. And we'll work together toward that goal. And I'll tell you, full disclosure, some don't try in the end, but not because they're not able to take on buds, but because they're not right to take on buds. And that's a critical thing I want the listener to understand. We have a design. I talked about no accidents. I talked about how things come together like they're supposed to. I sincerely believe, after doing this thing for decades, that every person has a unique design. I do. Mine involved being a nerd thug, a spy SEAL for NSA and the SEAL teams. Interestingly, they have two related names. Naval Special Warfare Group is SEALs, Naval Special Warfare, and Naval Security Group, NSG, is the NSA guys. So NSG and NSW. But I happen to have that unique pattern of hybridization. It's a weird path. Nobody has ever done it, basically, to do both things and stay in both things for my career like I did after. I've continued ever since being liaison officer for intelligence and operations besides running Impact Actual. So I want the listener to realize, you know, you don't have to be a SEAL. Just because you're young and male and motivated, or young and female now and motivated, does not mean that the SEALs is the right thing for you. It happened to work out that way for me, but I didn't know for sure when I heard about it from a couple of random recruiters about this random thing. Some people are meant to be florists. Some people are meant to be construction workers. Some people are meant to be executives on Madison Avenue. It's much more important to find what makes your heart sing. Sounds silly coming from an old crusty SEAL, but it does. It matters more by far. Find the thing that you're aligned with as compared to fighting into something because you feel like you have to earn it, because you feel like you have to measure up, because you feel like you're shit, because you feel like you're worthless and not as good as somebody else. We're all equally good. We do better and worse things on that spectrum of worth, but every goddamn human being is precious. Everyone has the capacity to make a difference in the world, no matter how shitty your past choices are. And so for me, that was my path. But a lot of guys that come to me and ask, hey, can you help me become a SEAL? I say, why? What's your why? What's the reason? Did you see a movie and it was cool? Yeah, like, I want to be in the movie. Do you want to pull a lot of ass because you think SEALs grab a lot of ass? That's not the reason to become a SEAL. Yeah. You can just say you're a SEAL and pull a lot of ass. So let's get real here. You know, that's your focus in life, Timmy. Do what you got to do, but don't waste your time and the Navy's time to try and become a SEAL. If you want to contribute as a SEAL, if you need to sacrifice of yourself and make a difference in the world, like I did, I was half motivated by that noble calling. I needed. You probably would be thinking about why would I go so to that extreme? And I've heard that question in other interviews. So I'll slip that right up front. Half motivated by nobility, saying I want to be able to give at the highest capacity I can imagine. And that for me was that. But again, surgeons and librarians and teachers and cooks and everybody has some best thing for them. And they can be happy in that. And they don't need to be saying, oh, I should have been a SEAL. Fuck that. Who cares about being a SEAL or being a cook? Do what is right for you. And so the other half, besides wanting to be raised as I could perceive it in my value system to the highest level of contribution to save lives or whatever, which firemen do and police do and Boy Scouts do, The other half was fear. The other half was insignificance. My fear of insignificance, my self-esteem, which was in the toilet. I didn't go into the hard stuff about my childhood, but I have PTSD from childhood. And the reason I know about that is because I have PTSD from the war, from combat, from the combat zone. So the VA slash other programs find PTSD therapy for all of us. And again, this audience, this very either military or military aware audience of yours, we all hear about PTSD, and it's become confusing to the national psyche to think that PTSD is a soldier thing. It's human thing. Trauma happens to humans, and some of those humans have uniforms on, and then we say, "Oh, it's combat PTSD." Now, if I'd had, you know, the tragic story about a man holding his dying buddy, that's trauma. But so is holding your dying buddy after a car crash, which many of my friends have done. That's trauma, the exact same experience for the human unconscious, unspoken life we have. We talk about body, mind, heart, and soul. The body is my meat. The mind is obviously my intellectual, my mental stuff. My heart is very important. And these days, even the Navy and Special Operations for Command are looking at resilience of the emotions. And that is so important to deal with the emotional life and the capacity to take things as they come. Two of my SEAL buddies of my generation, we're peers. Two of them had young sons, SEALs, next generation down, who have killed themselves. Mm. That's extraordinary to think about statistically. There's five of us, and the two young men shot themselves in the head because of the pain of these unseen wounds. And that's where I am so fucking passionate. We don't have to let them suffer. Yeah. They have the chance to live if we just man up ourselves and say, you know what? There is an emotional capacity. Don't say you fucking man up, you little bitch. Don't say, don't be a goddamn snowflake. Don't say rub some dirt on it. Although I'll say all those things to be provocative. Don't say it in your intentions. Say it. If you got to say rub some dirt on it, which is funny to me, I love that term, in the right context. I love watching guys get hurt. I really do. I like to watch myself get hurt when guys get to see it. There's something about our masculine culture that laughs at pain for other dudes. It's funny as hell. I don't know why. It sounds kind of shitty. Sounds like a poor human being, but it's fun.
It's true.
I mean, that's why Jackass is wildly successful. Guys get hit in the nuts. It's funny as hell. Do I want to get hit in the nuts? Absolutely not. But I laugh.
I hate it, but it's funny. But
the human thing, you know, back to the human thing. That's where we need to actually find our solutions for 22 a day, for the divisions in society itself. I'm going to shut up in a second here, but we talk about masculine or toxic masculinity. That's a very hot topic, very loaded topic, because a lot of people are saying, what's so toxic about masculinity? And I reiterate, it's not saying masculinity is toxic any more than water is toxic. If people can just shut the hell up, take a step back from the political, emotional strife between philosophies, which is where we're destroying our country. If we can step back for a minute and say, yeah, water is not toxic, but there is toxic water. Same exact thing as masculinity. Masculinity is the greatest thing I know next to femininity in the universe, in the millennia. There's been yin yang. There's been masculine, feminine energies. I don't give a shit what your plumbing is. If you have one of these that I got, congratulations. And you want to call yourself a man? Cool. If you don't, that's your identity. Good. I respect that. If you like to have sex with the people that are designed like you are, good. I don't give a shit. It's not about the person. I'm not going to lord over somebody else's identity, how they identify. I'm going to say, let's acknowledge that there is a masculinity and femininity. They're both beautiful expressions of humanity. And let's work from there to respect each other, find solutions together, and acknowledge everyone's dignity. That's the power. So masculinity for me is a huge thing. I teach men. I have a man course. And ultimately, we need to help men step into that gap. And to say, it is okay to be a male. It is okay to be hairy. It's okay to be bald. It's okay to have tattoos. It's okay to be a man in this sense, all in these standard ideas about what it means. But you got to sacrifice. You got to give. You got to protect. You got to do these things to be in that capacity. And we don't have that right now. There's a lot of confusion And it's time for us to step up and have grown-up conversations about being good people with each other and respecting different paths and different understandings of life.
Oh, I agree. And I've been called that myself, you know, and I didn't understand it. I'm just like, whatever, you know, just go with the flow, but I'm trying to understand it more and better myself. And
thing about being afraid to talk about pain, about emotional pain. The boys who shot themselves, I'll call them John and Mark. That's not their real names. But my brother's sons, they died of toxic masculinity. They died of the inability to share their emotional pain.
That's tough. And do you think it's just the warrior in them that they, I mean, cause there's things that I won't share either. You know what I mean? And I don't know why I won't. I just don't like talking about it from my time in Iraq. And it's just like, I'm just going to leave it where it lays. I don't want to be asked about it. I don't want to, where I know deep down inside some point I want to share it, but I don't want to be judged by it either. You know what I'm saying?
Right. And like in recovery, you know, I mentioned earlier, I'm in recovery from my addiction, which happens to be booze. I tried weed. I think I tried coke. I think I dropped acid because I was always drunk. I don't know what I took. I was too drunk in my drunkenness that I took some stuff and I didn't give a shit. I was like, weed, whatever. It just makes me paranoid. I was looking over my shoulder all the time. Like, hey, who's going to get me? So I don't like that. But booze, woo, I'm flying high. And I just progressively destroyed my life, destroyed every relationship, destroyed every job, progressively tried to kill myself. In fact, didn't try. There's a funny little side story. I didn't kill myself when I was suicidal because I hated myself so much. How's that for paradox? I hated myself too much to kill myself because I was convinced as I looked down from the third deck of my barracks at the ground below and the lawn and the sidewalk, I was convinced I was such a fuck up, such a piece of shit, such a worthless bag of wasting breath skin that I would fail and I would break my damn neck and I would become a quadriplegic. And I would become a greater burden on those I was trying to protect from my existence. That's how much I hated myself. So hopefully somebody can relate to that, because I know you've talked in about the people that reach out to you and say, dude, I didn't want to kill myself, but I kind of did, but you helped me not. This conversation is so important.
It's powerful.
Important to tell people, hey, I've been there. I understand where you're coming from. And here's how I didn't go that way. Well, in my case, like I said, it was kind of serendipity. I was so self-loathing. I had self-esteem that, you know, they had to dig a new bottom in the well to put my self-esteem where how low it was, because I didn't think I had worth. Like I said earlier, every human has worth. Every human being has worth, and every human being can make new choices, because it's not about your worth as the inherent existence of a person is not the thing, that the choices we do to go way down or way up on our quality of life and our quality of contribution, which I believe is the driving motivation for every human being. Other animals contribute babies, and that's it. They contribute presence. An elephant herd contributes presence. Like the elephants will mess up the lions when they come for the babies. They provide that. They contribute that, but they don't contribute anything beyond their bones for posterity. We uniquely contribute what comes after me. What, not only my children, but what will my 10 generations beyond me think? We think about that as human beings.
Yep.
In our DNA, in our unique human makeup. And that's, but when we think we're garbage because we've been taught that, like I talked about having some interesting experiences. So I'll be generally specific that it's mental illness, some very intense mental illness within my family in my earliest years and ever since. And that helped to establish the concept in my mind that I was a piece of shit. I didn't deserve attention or love or whatever the basic human need was in my formative years. And that carried on. And I went about my life for the past 56 years trying to prove that I was worthy of living by doing remarkable things. A lot of overachievers are compensating for thinking they're a shit-filled Twinkie. Golden brown on the outside, but God forbid anybody gets close enough to you in an intimate relationship to take a bite and they'll see that shit inside. They'll know what garbage. So that's the life I've grown out of. I've evolved out of by God's grace and decades of talking to healthy people that are helping me learn more healthy patterns, which I now help other people do.
That's amazing. I've never looked at it that way, you know, because I'm guilty of it too. I don't like letting people in, you know what I mean? And I'm very guilty of it, and I need to start letting more people in.
That's quality of life. That's what spills from that. Quality of life grows. It's like planting a seed and having healthy ground, not stones, not dry sand, not rock sheet. But we, by dealing with that part, especially for macho men, women have the advantage of being, I won't say biological. I'm not going to start any fights about gender. Women in our society, and in, I've worked in 36 countries, so quiz me, anybody, you know, if you want to push back on me and say, that's bullshit, that's only an American thing. Okay, well, let's talk about the other 35 countries. I'll tell you exactly what I saw in Asia, in the European continent, in Africa, in South America. I'll tell you exactly what I saw, and I'll tell you, there's a great song, I'm Gonna Love You Forever, Forever and Ever, Amen. Well, I think it's Randy Travis. Mm-hmm. And one of the best lines I've ever heard in any song ever is from that song. He says, as long as old men sit and talk about the weather, as long as old women sit and talk about old men, that's us. That's humans. You see the memes on social. There's 1,000 memes out there about she's looking over at him and thinking, I wonder what he's thinking. And he's thinking, I wonder why they put a round pizza in a square box and cut it in triangles. You know, he's like, she's like, I bet he's thinking about other women. No, he's not. No, I'm not.
Exactly. I'm about
pizza in a box and whites and triangles, right? But that's the masculine and feminine I was talking about earlier. If we can acknowledge that and respect it and say women aren't shitty, just because I've suffered from experiences with women, part of that was my own limited thinking about that experience and that relationship. Women don't need to say men suck, or people who identify as women or related or attracted to men don't need to say men suck because they make no sense. It's true. We don't make any sense to each other. The battle of the sexes has been going on for millennia. But when we understand, hey, that let me just focus on controlling the one thing I can, me, I can control me and that nothing else. When I control me and step back from my ego and say, I'm going to fight you to dominate. I'm going to fight you to prove I'm right. Screw that. I had a counselor one time who said, would you rather be happy or right? And I realized, oh, you know what? Happiness rocks.
Yeah. And
right is just something you got to defend on a hillside, a hilltop every morning, every day. I don't like the fighting every day. I'm just going to be happy in my life and give where I can.
It feels good when you give, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I used to, like I said, I fought and tried to figure out how I could give back, and it ended me alive. But now that I'm doing this, I feel so much better about like the rest of my day is going to be amazing.
Yeah.
You know, and it feels so good.
This is a tremendous gift you're offering to the world. It's making a difference when people become a little healthier. It's nibbling. I call it nibbling around the edges. We can't change the world. You know, we talk about the sand dollar on the beach, and the guy throws it back in the water or whatever, the starfish. And he says, and dude's like, there's 10,000 starfish. You can't make a difference. He said, I made a difference that one. That's mm-hmm. what we can do. And that's your child, your spouse. That's your brother or sister, your colleague, your person on the street you don't know that's in a moment of crisis. I'm here. A reassuring hand on a human form is literally splitting the burden in half. Because we need that. And when our boys put bullets in their mouths, they don't understand they have that. They can't understand. They feel like they'll be judged. I was, as a SEAL, you know, we hide everything. We hide every pain, every injury. In my past 3 years of physical therapy and chiropractic and discovering pains, I found, although I've never broken a bone for some bizarre reason, I've had some amazing skydiving crashes, went into the parachute crashes into the runways and sides of mountains and stuff. But my body has never been broken in the bone, but every ligament's been torn. My ribs were twisted in the rib cage at one point. I had a surgery on my neck for herniation. So I had my neck cut open and get spinal surgery. But I found that the things I lied about, my snapped ankle, I sprained an ankle on my first jump at Benning. And I lied about it. And I ran on it for the next 2 weeks because we had to get through the course. And I wasn't going to get stuck in Benning Hill. So I lied. I lied about that like 500 other things in my career. And we lie about the emotional pain. And God forbid you seek counseling during my generation in the military, because it'll be found out. And they'll be like, oh, we got a weak one. Get him out of here. We can't have him on the ops because he might kill his brothers. Because there was a lack of understanding. And it actually created a greater weakness. and it created greater behavior patterns that lead to young men killing themselves because we didn't understand this dimension. I call them the superpowers, body, mind, and heart and soul, the physical, mental, emotional, and the ethical or spiritual. These are all real aspects of our life. These are all real components that make up the human being. But we only honor the beards, tattoos, and biceps. We only respect that at the superficial level. Go beyond that. You say, yeah, but he's got great willpower too. His mind is really strong. Okay, cool. So we have 1.5 units of wholeness. The human body is 4.0 units, this body, mind, heart, and soul thing. When we recognize the emotional crisis that we have right now where boys are killing themselves, and we say the source is they don't comprehend. They have no muscle memory of talking about their problem, about talking about what they're struggling with. And then they get to a crisis point where there's what they have to talk. It's a lot like an abscess, an emotional abscess. When you have a piece of meat that has an abscess in it, it bulges and bulges and bulges, it eventually bursts. Mm-hmm. And will release all that tissue, the fluid. But the emotional stuff is building, building, building. And I the more it does, because every one of these aspects touches the others. If I have a bad toothache, then I'm not going to do well on my chem test. I can't think. My mind isn't working while my body's hurting. Same thing with my emotions. My child could walk up to me and say, Daddy, she was mean to me at school. I'm like, go away. I'll talk to you later. Well, guess what? My child just had a need rejected by her father. She's suffering. And those kinds of things compound too. I'm splashing pain out in the universe here. The same thing is true with the emotional stuff. If it's bubbling up, you can't make good decisions here. You can't make ethical decisions. You know what? Fuck my wife. Screw it. I'm going to go bang this chick over here because she's throwing at me and she's mean to me. But that's not the right place to make those decisions, which is in the soul capacity, body, mind, heart, and soul. Like I said, it's ethical. It's your moral compass. That you can, when you're in emotional pain, you can't make better conscience decisions, and the soul dimension gets depleted or reduced. So these guys don't know they can talk.
Yeah,
that's why in front of powerful peace, I say, talk about it, talk about it. There's a book. This is my working copy. That's why it's all scribbled on and dog-eared. But in front of powerful peace, and I put a letter to veterans and recruits saying, you're going to be scarred or you have been scarred, body, mind, heart, and soul. You have to talk about it.
Do you think it's a military, do you think it's a something the military should take a step back and look at addressing these kind of things?
It is. The military is doing that. I won't say that for the the rank and file, conventional boot camps and basic trainings, I won't say they're thinking about it at that level, but I can tell you SOCOM is very aware of it. A friend of mine is Brian Losey, former WARCOM, the commander of all Naval Special Warfare. Mm-hmm. And he and I were talking a few years ago on his back patio at his mansion. They got WARCOM gets a mansion on San Diego Harbor. It's nice. But we're talking about this next generation we have to recruit for SEALs. And he was like, yeah, we really need to, you know, apply the lessons in powerful peace, the idea of the whole person, the holistic person. Because when you just call a guy a pussy because he has a feeling, you're literally creating a crisis for the future. The feelings aren't being a little bitch. If I'm an actual malingerer, you know, if I'm actually laying in my bed like a certain guy who I won't name, but a lot of people know he's famous. In his actual platoon days, he was lying in bed. Oh, I have a stomach ache. You guys go ahead and do the op without me. And like mission and training and stuff like that. He was always always making a reason why he couldn't step up. But he didn't have an excuse, in my opinion. That's being a little bitch. You got to be out there and you got to suffer. If the pain is there, you got to go through the pain. Even Tom Berenger in platoon, one of the best lines ever, like I talked about, is when the cherry boy gets gut shot and he's dying in agony. He's yelling and yelling, and Tom Berenger grabs him by the throat and says, shut up and take the pain. I know I sound like I'm being hypocritical, talking about both sides of my mouth. Shut up and take the pain is right when your brothers are going to die because you're screaming. Was the cherry boy a little bitch? Absolutely not. He was a human being who got bullets in his gut. That's one of the most horrible things a living human being can experience. But he was right. Tom Berenger, as monstrous as his character was, Barnes, he was right. Because that's why he was monstrous. He was like toxic masculinity in a movie. He was an encapsulation of toxic masculinity. But not all of it is wrong. Sometimes you do gotta shut up and take the pain if your brothers are gonna die for it. But to cross that shut up and take the pain concept into every aspect of life, that's why you have millions of drunken veterans from earlier wars. My best friend from childhood grew up with that, a toxic abusive father from World War II. Who didn't talk, wouldn't talk, had no respect for his own emotional needs. And the only way you can deal with that is anger and hostility. And it's all a big force field. It's protecting me from all of you because I can't deal with this shit. So fuck off, get away from me. And that is not healthy either. Sometimes you gotta talk about the pain if it's in this emotional capacity. So like I was saying about Brian, Admiral Brian Losey, we were talking about that and he said, we got to get a better quality of men in. We have to have SEALs leading the way in special operations and especially within the larger force to say we are human beings. We do have emotional needs. We do respect those needs. We're not going to sit around singing Kumbaya and Timmy has a sore toe because it's okay if Timmy has a sore toe. Timmy needs to shut up and take the pain. But if we outright reject the emotional capacity, the emotional need, the emotional brother to brother talking like, hey, man, this really hurts. My wife is talking about leaving. That hurts to say it releases half the pain. And then if the guy receiving it is like, you know what, man, that fucking sucks. Let's deal with it. Let's deal with it because you're not alone.
Yeah.
My buddies, John and Mark, that shot themselves, their boys shot themselves in the mouth. They were alone. There was no way out. And
yeah,
that is enough proof for me that there's a crisis we need to address.
I agree totally, 100%. I'm actually trying to start a thing where I take veterans fishing, hunting, camping, whatever. You know what I mean? Trying to get them out.
Oh yeah,
doing that's, stuff again, feeling like they're part of something.
Yep. I used to guide in the Adirondacks, like canoe and trail guiding, and I still do that. I still guide. My handle is River Rob. Because I love the rivers. And so I've seen transformation the minute or the hour a person steps into the woods or onto the river or into the field with a duck hunting trip or whatever. The minute a person steps out into the wild, into our natural roots where we belong, yep. I'm definitely a caveman in my heart. We instantly feel better and people, they'll be scared. They'll be confused. Like, wait, what's that sound?
Yep.
It's dark now. I'm scared because I was taught to the dark is scary and uncontrollable. I love the dark as a special reconnaissance guy. I hate the white lights. Don't put that light around me. Give me zero viz and let me adapt to the environment. And I help other people do that in the wild. And like you'll be doing when they just step out into a nice clear sunny day, walking in a marsh or whatever, we instantly remember. The soul remembers. That's where we're supposed to be. None of this fluorescent light bullshit.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't wait to get it up off the ground running. I've started my website and it's ready to get it done. I got a couple questions for you. What's your favorite quote ever?
I think, having never thought about it before, I'm actually running through my mental database real quick. One thing that people from NSA are famous for doing is analysis paralysis. Like, my mind has so much ability to handle so many ideas at the same time. It's like, it just stops. But I think the one that comes to mind is between stimulus and response is a space. And in that space is our power to choose. Because in Impact Action, we talk about choose your change because change is inevitable. Evidence one. What do they call it? They present articles of evidence in a courtroom. Okay, my scalp is proof that. For those that are only hearing the audio, I'm bald as shit. So I had a lot of hair as a kid, and now I'm bald as shit. So change happens. Did I choose it? Absolutely not. But I talk about always accept, never settle, because I can't change my height of being almost 5'11". I want to be 6 foot, but didn't get it. But if I waste an hour of my life or a minute of my life being mad about that, that's a self-inflicted wound. My height's not going to change except in the other direction. But my weight is changeable. I'm responsible for that. So I never settle for things I can change, and I always accept things I can't. It's the serenity prayer. God grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage, change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. So it's the serenity prayer in four words. Always accept, never settle. So when I think about change happening, it's going to happen. My scalp did, and a million other things happened in my life, but I'm purposeful about it. And so Stephen Covey wrote The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, which I recommend to every listener. 7 Habits book. And he talks in there about a quote he saw by Viktor Frankl, who was a psychiatrist who survived the Holocaust in the death camps. And Viktor Frankl wrote the book called Man's Search for Meaning. And in Man's Search for Meaning by Frankl. Stephen Covey's quoting this quote that changed his life. Between stimulus, your wife's being a dick to you, and response, you be a dick to your wife, there's a space. When we recognize that power of choice, the entire universe changes for us. We can do anything within our physical, emotional, mental power. When I recognize that if Tom walks into the office, I'm like, good morning, Tom. He's like, what's good about it? Okay. I can say, well, fuck you too. Or I can say, I wonder why Tom's acting uncharacteristically. I can give him benefit of the doubt. And I can only do that if I'm in a position of great strength myself. That's why we talk about total self-mastery. These four superpowers are all about mastering the self, the only thing I control in the world. So between stimulus and response, there's a space, and in that space is our power to choose. And in your power to choose is everything that comes in your future. All of our outcomes, 99.7%, to use a statistic. I just learned, by the way, I was reading a science journal that said that 74% of statistics are made up on the spot. Just made that up.
Really?
I'm full of shit. So I can't control the asteroid landing on my head. That is not in my power. But I can control how I behave toward Tom, toward my partner, toward my kid. I can control how I behave toward me. I was talking to an old recovering drunk like me, but older and crustier one time, and he said, if you treated me like I treat myself, I would kill you. And that opened my eyes. I realized, that's a self-abusive son of a bitch. And then I turned my eyes back to my own life and realized, I'm a self-abusive son of a bitch. I'm sick of it. Sick of suffering because I'm perpetuating old false narratives about being garbage and being abusive to other people and myself especially. So I'll tell you guys a real quick treat. I was walking with a very expensive latte. I was going to my favorite park to work at my favorite picnic table with this Surface I'm using right here, Microsoft Surface. Shout out. You guys want to send me a royalties for saying it? Go ahead and do it. see if I can get Bill Gates to call his friends. But I had a latte that I paid like $6.50 for. It's a real treat taking care of me and going out there with my good cigar, my good coffee, and badoink, I dropped the damn latte on the ground.
Oh, damn.
Before I took the first sip, and I was like, what happened to me? As I talked about with my new coaching client yesterday, we had a discovery call, and it's a perfect match, and he's been beating himself up too, like many of the people listening have done. And I said, in habit, deeply ingrained habit of over a half a century, you stupid mother, angry at myself. That involuntary response. The stimulus was me dropping the coffee on the ground and watching it go bloop, bloop, bloop all over the sidewalk. The response, because I have been expanding my space between the stimulus and response, my reaction. Stephen Covey said, we're response able. That's what responsible means. We're response able. We choose what to do. We don't act like animals. A dog barks, another dog barks. You can't choose otherwise. I can choose because that space that I expand by practicing thinking about my responses. So I said half of what I would normally say, you stupid mother. And then I stopped and said, huh. So that happened. And it was a real transformation for me. This is only a few weeks ago in my own path. Like I said, I've been dealing with recovery for 30 years, with PTSD for 3 years and so forth. We're all on a path somewhere. We're all somewhere on our growth and healing pattern, our spectrum of healing. But for me, it was that moment I realized I could say, instead of saying you stupid piece of shit, I could say, huh. So that happened and move on. And the next hour wasn't ruined because I had self-abused. The next hour was wide open with creativity because I accepted something. In fact, I was very proud of myself. Damn proud of myself for doing that because it was a breakthrough.
Yeah.
Because that is what happened. It happened. Like, okay, that happened. Okay, it's past. Do I want to suffer today in this moment? Cool. I can choose that about that thing that happened that is unchangeable. Or I can say, so that happened. And now what am I going to do with the rest of my day and my cigar?
That's very, I think I do the same thing, honestly. Something will, I get real heated and then it ruins me for about 30 minutes and then I'm good again. And then something else to do it. And it's throughout the whole damn day.
Yeah. Being controlled by the circumstances. But the truth is you're giving your control to the circumstances. They don't have you. Even another person, the person's a dick to me. I've known people, we talk about free rent. People have done me great wrongs in the past, no doubt. And I've resented those things greatly. And I've carried them for years in some cases. And then somebody said, you really want to keep giving them free rent in your head? Do you think your corrosive experience of thinking about that and being mad about it and really wishing that guy would get what's coming to him, do you think that hurts them at all?
No.
It doesn't hurt them at all. It doesn't hurt them one little iota. So if I'm going to be a small character man, let me do it in more productive ways. Because all I'm doing is devouring myself with these feelings of resentment. It's to resent from the Latin. Sent is the root word for feeling, just like sentiment or sentimental. To re-feel is to self-inflict a wound of saying, yeah, I'm going to do this thing to myself. That guy did it to me. It's a real thing. He really harmed me. He really stole my wallet or my girl or my car. But I'm not going to feel that again and hurt me because he's an asshole. That makes me the asshole. I don't deserve the pain. And I'm suffering by a self-inflicted re-feeling, resenting of that experience. Let it go. Forgiveness is not for the violator. Forgiveness is not for the person that screwed you over. Forgiveness is to relieve you of the pain of remembering it all the time instead of being in a deep, beautiful, silly conversation with your partner or helping your kid get ready for her big science project. That's where the energy deserves to be laid instead of re-feeling stupid shit that I can't change and the free rent I'm giving a guy in my head that will never suffer for it. He's out there hurting other people and feeling good about it because he's a sick bastard and that's what sick bastards do. I can't change his experience, but I can change mine.
Yeah, 100%. Another question for you. Biggest life's lesson?
My worth. No doubt, my worth. Like I said, I struggle with it for almost all my life and different degrees, reducing level of degrees over my lifetime. But my worth, I'm not worse than anyone else. And I used to, another phrase I love to use to make sense to a lot of people is, I'm an egomaniac with an inferiority complex. So if the bar is right here in the middle of my nose, my big old French nose, I think I have like two things that are French. My name is French, obviously. So I have, my nose is French. I can smell perfume at like 7 miles, and my tongue is French. We'll leave that there. But everything else is Norwegian. But my big old French nose here, above it is in the black. Think financial, in the black. I'm in the black, or I'm in the red. That's bad. We don't want to be in the red. I've always thought I was like below everyone else and had to earn my right to be a person, had to earn my, and it had to earn respect from others. That's another great confusion in society, is to say you have to earn respect. I will respect a man choosing to honor his wife and take care of the family. I'll honor a man honoring his vows. I will respect these behaviors, these choices. That's all there are, is choices. But like I said earlier, the human being, the core of the human, deserves respect and dignity. And if we deny that to others, like we commonly do in the masculine world, especially bigger to little, look at The Rock Kevin Hart,
yeah.
Johnson and Kevin Hart, they're literally, one guy weighs about 270 and one guy weighs about 105 or whatever, but they have this deep respect, man to man, heart to heart. That's what we should all do, big or little, you know, rich or poor. People in a position of strength that have never suffered don't understand what it means to be regular human, to be little or weak or poor. And those people deserve respect too. So I can respect behaviors and choices, but I also maintain a sense of respect for humans. In Powerful Peace, I talk about the guard at Abu Ghraib prison who taught me about respecting the prisoners, the detainees. And I thought he was full of it. I thought, how do you respect terrorists? He said, I don't know which ones are terrorists. That we can't even vet all these guys we've captured. But some of them, many of them are innocent. And it'll take 6 months before they can go back to their families. Their families don't know what's going on with them. They don't know if they're alive or dead. And I said, holy crap, can I imagine that in my life and my family and my wife at the time? And they said, even the bad guy, the real bad guy right over there, he pointed at a guy. He said that guy killed a couple of Americans. My buddy saw it happen. I still respect him with my behavior. I express respect. That he doesn't respect the lifestyle choices of that guy, but he can behave with respect because what? He's controlling himself. He controls himself and says, Mr. Ahmed, will you please come with me to the hygiene station? Will you come with me to the food station? You know, whatever they need from this guy, will you come with me for interrogation or an interview? And that guy will say, okay, because he calls me Mr. Muhammad. I'm a badass jihadi. Yes, I will. You better respect my authority, to quote the South Park boys. My worth is not below any other person's. And it's also not above any other person's. I'm not above Bill Gates. I'm not below Bill Gates, and I'm not above the guy that I see on the street corner begging for money. I'm a human being with absolute worth and dignity, and I will defend that. I will defend it with love and respect to other people, because I know we're all somewhat limited in understanding these things. I'm not going to judge other people because they're not at the same level of awareness that we deserve to be respecting each other.
100%. What was the best thing about being a Navy SEAL?
I think pulling all the strange ass around the world. Just kidding. That was the best great advertisement for the team. Yeah. No, that was the best thing for a lot of my friends. I wasn't doing that. I was married when I was in the teams for those 10 years. And I didn't pull strange ass anywhere. I had a lot of it thrown at me, but I chose not to. And I don't regret that, because again, I controlled myself and I maintained my self-respect. But do I sometimes wonder how awesome it would have been to experience some of those awesome things? Yeah, that'd be great. But I made choices that were right for me, and that's the best we can do in life. So the best thing about being a SEAL is not the sense of accomplishment. That's a wonderful thing, and saying, yeah, this is, I'm proud of myself for doing this. We should give ourselves credit for that. But for me, it's the sense that I realized in BUDS, as BUDS was designed to do, to go 10 times more than a guy thinks he can handle. You know, if a guy thinks he can do 20 push-ups, you build him up to where he does 200, literally in one sitting. They did that to us when we got punished. We got punished frequently. 10, you know, think you can run a mile, you're going to run 10. You know, think you can hold your breath for, you know, 20 seconds, you hold it for, I don't know, I'm not going to do the math on that. But my longest breath hold was 315. So it's about understanding the limits aren't there. There are physical limits. I can't lift a locomotive like the Superman story. I can't lift a locomotive. No matter how motivated I am, no matter how strong my positive mental attitude is, PMA, I will not lift the locomotive. But in my life potentiality, it's infinite. I can make such an impact, thus impact actual, on the world. You know, maybe you're again, very familiar military audience would understand the comms term of the actual, but I'll give a quick snapshot. So impact is making a difference, you know, hitting something, making a difference. And of course you can do negative impact too. So I'm always clear that we're trying to make a positive impact in the world with our lives. But actual, like you see in platoon, guy picks up when he's calling for all fire on my position. And he's like, this is Phoenix actual, which it means the authority. It means the commander of Phoenix battalion or division or whatever. And he's calling back and saying, yes, I authorize all dump all ordnance on my position as Phoenix actual. So impact actual is the authority on impact, making a difference. That's our intention, is to make us the lions of impact actual, to become the change agents in the world and infect other people with these ideas about self-worth and power and accountability. And you only control you, nothing else in the world, but do this well and you can control the world. Okay, real quick. So General Colin Powell, Secretary of State Colin Powell, said, if you think you're a leader and you look back and nobody's following you, you're not. Because being a leader is not about a brass plaque on a door. It's about modeling behavior people will follow. Like Brian Losey, the admiral I talked about, former war comm, former boss of mine. I'll follow him to the gates of hell because I know he gives a shit about me. A leader cares about people. And so that's what the lesson I took away from Colin Powell is, You don't get to control the people that are designated under you. You only influence others. Tony Robbins said, powerful piece is a must read for those who wish to influence others. So we influence others by controlling ourself, by being the person they want to follow. Org charts are bullshit. It's just a shared agreement on paper with ink. The actual leadership, the actual followership is based on respect and love. And that's based on being the best person you can be.
Yeah, Colin Powell was a great one.
You know, a lot of people fought for him to run for president. He had too much integrity for that.
Yeah, I thought he would have been a really damn good one.
Yes.
Do you have any foundations? If you do, you want
to talk about? Funny you should ask. So let me give you a quick snapshot of what our framework, the lions I talk about, are my team. I love my team. I'm so emotional, so devoted to my team, and vice versa, because we all have this shared burning desire to make a difference in the world, and we aren't willing to sacrifice. Always accept, never settle. I accept I'm 5'10" and a half, but I don't settle for the fact that I'm achieved or arrived or anything. I'm not done. I'm growing. I'm learning, and that's the growth mindset. And I'll grow until I die. God willing, I'll have that. I'll be able to keep saying, I don't know it all. I don't know it all. Please tell me what you know. That way I can learn more and I'll accept or reject what you tell me based on what my assessment is based on my experience. But we have Trisha, we call her Ninja. She's our director of ops and finance. Director of sales and marketing is Patrick. We call him Sledge, fighter pilot. So Trisha is a successful accountancy owner. Patrick is a sales executive for a pharmaceutical and a fighter pilot from the Air Force. Jason Rowinski is our director of training and development, and he's a resigned pastor, evangelical pastor. His wife took over the job. And now she's the priestess in the family I forget what tradition, but in their tradition, an ordained minister is called a priest. So she's the boss of him now. But we have this spectrum of amazing human beings. Our executive administrator is Melissa called Prima because she was an actual ballerina, a no shit dance in New York City. So we have these people that make up our team. And like I said, Jason is a resigned minister. Now he runs a nonprofit in Oklahoma City. And he and I have been talking in this past week about what our foundation will be. In fact, it won't be a foundation. We're going to build a nonprofit because what we want to do, and maybe you or your listeners can give us ideas, we want to make a way to make our services as the impact coaches and also our Unchained program available to veterans in transition or other people that want to grow from where they are. I'm looking for dissatisfaction. When I talk on a discovery call with somebody, I want to hear dissatisfaction. They're no longer ready to settle for the crap they're in right now, but they don't know how to get out of it. That's what I'm trying to reach. Those who don't know how to get out of it and they want to move on. And we're thinking, how will we develop our nonprofit to feed the corporate side to be able to give the services to those who wouldn't otherwise be able to afford it? That's the place we're going. But we haven't established it yet. It'll have the name Impact in it probably.
That's awesome. Whenever you get that link or whatever, put it in the description. I'll share it and
right on.
Pass it on to everybody. Got a couple more questions for you. You do a swim. Is it New Jersey or New York?
It's New York, the Hudson River, but we're in Jersey for part of it because they're so close. You know, we're actually driving through Jersey to get to the launch point, and then we swim to New York.
I'd watched the article and the little news clip, and I thought that was powerful. The thing, if you want to describe what y'all do on that.
So that swim is a fundraiser for, I forget the name. I'll think of it, I think, but it's a fundraiser for veterans, and it's an organization that raises money to make available to veterans for housing issues or other struggles they're going through. You and I both know in our transition, we didn't know nothing from nothing about how to be a civilian. I had to learn what I do as a civilian by interpreting transferable skills. Thanks to my transition assistance people, they said, okay, what you did when you lead a platoon, you're doing management. Okay, cool. I write down management. Now I know a thing, right? I learned a new thing. So my skills include management. And guess what? My first job after the Navy was management. I began managing a place for Lockheed Martin because I knew how to do that, but I didn't know that I knew how to do that. So the people who are in that transition, especially careerists, walk away from a career of doing one thing and being fed and housed. And of course, it's, you know, literally, the military is a socialist system. When you look at the actual economics of it, they gave me money for clothes, right? Lockheed Martin didn't give me money for clothes, but we walk out of that socialist service system into understanding we are 100% responsible for our money, our finances, our management of our lodging, and we're not fully prepared how to do that. So that's what these guys do with the Hudson River swim, and it's primarily a SEAL swim. It's called GI Go. GI Go is the organization. GI Go, the Hudson River swim, which was branded as a SEAL thing, but actually I think it's expanded to a few hundred people now swimming across the Hudson, and a good half of them are not SEALs because you can't get them any SEALs in the water, and most of us are old anyway. But it's become very popular, and so we have like supporters, fire service people, and ambulance and police joining in. And making this big swim to raise awareness and raise funds for GI Go.
Is that the website GI Go that people can go and
GIGO.org, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah.
I like to put that on there too, because that really is pretty powerful. I saw.
Yeah, it is. It's really it's a very special thing, and that's why I love to do support for. It looks like GIGO. It's GIGO.org. Just confirming that before. Yep, there it is. GIGO.org.
Okay.
GIGO.org. And I love to contribute. One of the things I want to leave the listeners with is that you can make a lot of a difference in the world by just giving little things of what you have plenty of. If you have plenty of time, there's a lot of people that need time. If you have plenty of money, of course, a lot of people need little pieces of money. Micro lending, for example, is a big thing over across the pond in South Asia. What's his name? Yunus. I think it's Muhammad Yunus is the guy that really founded the idea of micro funding, micro lending. But if you have $1 million and somebody can literally build her little bit, her basket weaving business in a small village somewhere with $10 to get the reeds she needs, the strips she makes into baskets, and they ship them into Delhi, and those are sold in Delhi, and now she gets $100 back for the $10 she invested in the materials, and then she did the labor of making these baskets. That $10 out of my $10 million is nothing, but she established a life, and she's feeding her family because she got $100 back, and her daughter learns that women can also have a place in society, can also be breadwinners, can also contribute to the family, and you're now radiating this ripple effect throughout the village. Other women are like, well, I was just supposed to sit in the house and make stew with the stuff my husband bring me, but I can wait. I can get 10 bucks and do the same thing. So microlending is an example of how any of us can make a difference. We can microlend energy. We can microlend attention. We can microlend of our like resource, whatever I have. I talk real good, right? So I've done a couple of narrations for a guy's book, right? I can do calligraphy. Who does calligraphy? Actually, as a kid, I picked up a pen and started doing calligraphy because I like that kind of art. So whatever you have in your life, whatever you love to do, find a way to give pieces of it away to other people, and it creates this little splashes of beneficial kind of a lifestyle. We call a virtuous cycle compared to a vicious cycle because
Yeah.
people see it, and people are blessed in the environment where you splash those things, and others will get the example and say, I can do that too.
No, that's awesome. Never even thought of that before. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and then when that lady sends her 10 bucks back out of the 90 she's keeping out of the 100 she got, you're establishing a new concept in a kind of like Star Trek. They go somewhere and make no drastic changes on the population they would encounter, but they would inspire by their presence. And people would say, yeah, it's possible to make technology that you can fly a spaceship through space. So now our eyes are opening, our minds are opening. What else can we do? What kind of potential can we unpack in our personal lives, which is what Impact Actual is all about.
Yeah, I also put that link in there as well, in the
Star
description.
Trek.
Is there anything else you'd like to add, or that's pretty much all the questions I
I,
had and
yeah, I want to leave the listener with this idea that I've been banging the drum for. You are deserving, not entitled. I have no time for entitlement. I have no time for people thinking, I was born with a silver spoon. You better keep feeding me with that silver spoon for the rest of my life. Screw that. That guy can go suck a dick and jump off a bridge. I really don't care about people that are self-entitled. And that's not just the rich ones. And I'm not saying rich people are bad. I'm just saying there's some very famous rich assholes in our politics right now who believe others they deserve by virtue of their accident of birth to be served. And that's not true. However, the human being does deserve to be respected and to be treated with dignity. Every human being does deserve that. And when we recognize that about others, then we can finally begin to realize it about ourself. And then when we learn that, we stop accepting shitty treatment because we teach people how to treat us. And as long as you're accepting shitty treatment, you will not be respected because the lower people around you, the lower in terms of character and ethics that are willing to treat people with disrespect and degrade them, those types will not comprehend that you have anything to give because you're accepting the degradation. So when you recognize that there's zero tolerance for being treated like shit because you can always walk away, then you suddenly unpack the potential to make the difference that you were designed to make, whether by God or an accident of evolution and nature. I'm not arguing that either, but you deserve to be treated well, and you did, and you should be treating other people well, because that's a blessing to the self. It's a gift to the self to be respectful in general. That means full of respect, right? Being full of respect is a great feeling. So that's the lesson I want people to take away, is like, stop settling. Always accept, never settle. I can't change my height. I can't change my weight. And I can definitely change whether I'm accepting shitty treatment from others or giving it to others, because that degrades the self. You're making yourself look shitty and you're making yourself feel shitty because you know it's not right to do. So raise the standard. Live with dignity and live with contribution.
Absolutely. I also want to give a shout out to my buddy, Marty. He's a huge listener. He supports the show. He's in New York. He sent me this plant, this little bush, and I told him I'd post it on here so he could see it.
Awesome. Here goes, Marty. Bravo. Yeah,
he's an awesome guy. He comes to North Carolina. We work out together. He's just a great guy, and can't thank you enough for his support and his love for the show. And thank you again for the plant. And then I'm going to replant it in something else, but Rob, your message, I think, is going to touch a lot of people, probably save a lot of lives, and I can't thank you enough for being on. Seriously, we had a long talk last year when some stuff went awry in my life, and you were there to listen and give me a little helpful hand and talk me through a lot of hard times, and I can't thank you enough, man.
Well, let me remind you, you deserved it.
Okay. Absolutely.
That's the lesson. You deserve to be heard. We all deserve to be heard. And sometimes we got to reach out. And I'm so grateful that you were willing to talk with me honestly about what's going on in your life. And I'm so grateful when anybody else is, you know, that honesty, sharing of the self is the greatest thing we can share. I don't care about money. I like money because it lets me not die. But I don't focus on the money of our work. Much more important. I'd say it's better to give than to receive, right? Standard traditional phrase, like at Christmas, we know that. We love watching our kids' eyes light up. It feels so good to give a kid something. They go, wow, gazinga, you know, my life is better. It's wonderful. That feels so nice. But at the interpersonal level, person to person, regardless of gender or age or economic status, human to human is the greatest gift we give ourselves while we share of it. And I want people to do that for themselves too.
Well, I just want you to know it meant the world to me, because I was going through a shit storm and it helped me through a lot every day, honestly. And I kept it close, near and dear to my heart, and it got me through some tough times. So I appreciate that more than you will ever know.
Thank you for sharing it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I'm going to end the broadcast. I want you to stick around for just 1 second. I know we went over the time frame just a little bit. I wanted to ask you something offline, and thank you for coming on. Your time is valuable, and thank you for sharing what you did with the audience. And I promise it's going to save some lives. So
well, I really appreciate the opportunity. It's a blessing for me, a real privilege.
Thank you so much.